You're listening to a Hindustan Times podcast brought to you by HT Smartcast.
Hi, this is Manjula Narayan, National Books Editor, Hindustan Times, and this is the Books and Authors podcast. It's a weekly podcast where I speak to authors who've got a new book out. Hi, so today we have with us Jassa Ahluwalia, who is the author of Both Not Half, a radical new approach to mixed heritage identity. Hi, Jassa.
Hello, Manjula. Thank you so much for having me.
Great. So, you know, Jassa, I mean, I've just finished reading your book, most of it. Like I said, you know, maybe one chapter I haven't finished. But it's really a good read. And it kind of, I mean, as an Indian who's grown up in India, you know, it's completely, a lot of the stuff that you're talking about is not something an Indian from India thinks about, but I mean, I can understand it. And it's, you know, it's quite revelatory. So in many ways, and I've like, and you mentioned Satnam Sangera, and, you know, I've like interviewed him as well in one of the older, you know, podcasts. And it's really not a quick read, but it's a very in-depth and, you know, it kind of like gets you inside. And I was thinking, you know, it's clearly a life's work, you know, kind of life's worth of thinking. You know, you've put in every, you know, everything that you've kind of like thought about and worked through in your head, you know, about your mixed heritage, about, you know, Sikhism and about, you know, generally religion and its purpose and, you know, everything and sexuality and, you know, identity, all these big questions. But you made it very approachable. So how, I mean, clearly you've been working on this for many years, but how did you eventually manage to do it? Because it seems...
That's a wonderful question. Thank you. I guess when I sat down to write the book, I struggled because of its scope and its ambition. I sat down thinking I was writing a book which was, you know, just a general nonfiction about mixed heritage identity, and it would explore history. And essentially, I thought I was writing a book of answers that I somehow had to present myself as an authoritative voice, and that I would be able to guide people who maybe, you know, were struggling with their own sense of mixed identity. And then I realized very quickly that that was not what I was capable of doing. I'm not an academic, I'm not a historian in any real sense. But what I did realize in that process was that I'm an actor, I'm a filmmaker, I'm a storyteller. And really, the book of Both Not Half is a journey, a quest, a journey of transformation, self-discovery. And I realized that all these questions that I were grappling with were, though they seem, you know, thematically very far-reaching, that actually in the context of a journey of like a character's transformation, it started to look quite straightforward. And so I had this, you know, I spent a year working on my proposal, really struggling with how to tell this story. And then I had a moment of crisis about a year into the process where I still hadn't finished a single chapter. And I just couldn't fathom how I was possibly going to write a whole book. And that's when I sat down and I reapproached it from the point of view of Jassa, the actor, the filmmaker. I laid out the story, or I laid out, like, you know, a story arc, being like, well, what is the opening image? And then the image of me as the 3-year-old in India dancing Bhangra, cousin's wedding, sort of came to me. And then I was like, well, what are the various bits, you know, what's act one, what's act two, what's act three? And that really unlocked something for me. And I realized that, because I thought I was writing a book which was about, either it was going to be the journey to articulating Both Not Half, this idea that my mixed heritage identity was not something that made me fractured and fractional, but that was, you know, I was whole and multiple. That's what Both Not Half was, as an expression. And, or the book was, it starts with Both Not Half, and then it's like, how does the world look different? And how do I examine all of these ideas of like gender and sexuality, politics, religion through the lens of this non-dual, non-binary way of thinking? And again, that was like far too ambitious because I had a friend who turned around and was like, Jasser, it sounds like you're trying to write a new history of the world. And I was like, oh yeah, that's kind of quite difficult to do. But what I realized was that Both Not Half was the middle of the story. It's Aladdin finding the genie in the lamp. It's the thing that changes everything. And so I realized I had this story, which was Jasser, the little kid growing up in a mixed heritage family in Leicester, a very mixed city with a large South Asian population, where I felt no sense of otherness or incongruity, then discovering Both Not Half as an articulation of who I am. And then the second, the second half, like the second half of the second act and act three, was the bit that I was then, ooh, well, this is the scary bit because now I've got to figure that bit out. And really, I realized in the process of writing that I was still on that journey. And so I actually started writing from the middle of the book. I started with chapter five, wrote through to the end of chapter eight, and then I came back and wrote from chapter one through to the middle. And then my editor very kindly helped me iron out all the kinks. But that was how I ended up doing it. And I only really came to the conclusion, to the end of it, the journey really in about March 2023. And that's how then, because then it made sense, because then it was like, well, but I want to talk about, like the history of, you say, the East India Company, but also there's aspects of like, the Sikh Empire, Maharaja Ranjit Singh, and then there's like the Anglo-Indians, and then I've also got this politics, and I couldn't figure out how it all fit together. But as soon as I sort of approached it as a story, a journey of transformation, this quest, I could then see the structure very clearly, and I was like, ah, at what point in this journey then, when can I then go into that history and that cultural commentary, and everything then became in service of the story. And my hope is that, and this is one of the wonderful things from the responses I've been getting so far, is that people are, I've had a few people who've read it in like a day or in 2 days, and they say it sort of reads like a novel. It has the impetus and the flow of, a good story. And that's how I sort of brought all of those threads together. It was less about being, I'm going to tell you about some history. Or I'm going to tell you about this, social issue. It was, here's my story, and here's how I got to the next bit of that story through that history or that, social science or whatever it is.
And I found the bits where you're describing your childhood really fascinating. I mean, that was a really nice part, and the whole community feeling and all that. Because I often wonder when a few times that I've visited Britain and I see so many people, mixed raced couples, and I often wondered then what their kids would think about their identity. And then I thought about that those times when I thought about that when I was reading your book, it was just like, it was telling me, what a person with, but everybody has these sort of conflicts. And so your book isn't just, and you talk about that as well. Everybody, finds themselves in between in some way or the other, right? And so your book is confined only to racial identity or,
Absolutely, absolutely. I so a lot of the book was born of, so initially the book was, so the story of Both Not Half begins with me essentially in 2019. I did a video for Instagram of me speaking Punjabi, pretending to be like this character of a Thaya-ji who was sort of berating me in Punjabi for using unorthodox ingredients in my dal. And that sort of spiraled into this, like, yeah, social media hit. That in turn inspired the hashtag Both Not Half in response to somebody who had commented on the video saying, this guy speaks better Punjabi than us and he's only half. And seeing only half on the page made, or on the screen, sorry, I looked at it and I was like, oh yeah, that's the problem with actually my thinking, and why I'm feeling this conflict is because I'm thinking of myself as this this half thing, this in-between thing, this diminished thing. And actually, I'm not, like this video makes very clear, I am not half. I am incredibly whole and multiple, and so both not half. The idea was born there. And then towards the end of that year, I was approached by the TEDx Chandigarh team, and they invited me to come to India, to Chandigarh, to do a TEDx talk. And I'd spent that summer up until that point really just trying to understand what both not half meant for myself. And I'd written a personal essay just for me to really understand the story. And then the offer to do the talk came through, and I was like, well, I've got this like perfectly, I've got the talk ready. And so it was like a real beautiful serendipitous moment. And so I went to Chandigarh, and I must admit, when I went, I had no expectation as to what the impact was going to be at the Tagore Theatre. I in my mind, I was like, I need to rehearse this to within an inch of its life so that I can I need to nail it because it's going to be on YouTube, and that's where most people are going to see it. And so, the fact that there's 800 people in the audience, try not to think about that. It doesn't really matter. Turns out it really matters because actually, as soon as I started talking, everyone loved it and they got it. And actually, it was afterwards, when I was chatting to people, that everyone started coming up to me and telling me how they identified with both not half. And to me now it makes obviously total sense, and I don't need to explain it to you or your listeners, but I just briefly I'll say that well, obviously India is a vast tapestry of diverse languages, cultures, ethnicities, religions, so the idea of being multiple is just a very common experience in India, obviously. And so that was beautiful because suddenly I felt like I went from being, I'd felt so alone in my experience. And I felt like that experience was something that created distance from India, from my heritage. And then suddenly find myself telling my story in Chandigarh and then having the most wonderful response from people who also understood it from their own experience. It created this beautiful sense of belonging. And that's really what I say about this book. Yes, as you identify it, it's about my story as somebody of mixed heritage. In many ways, it's just the story of somebody trying to figure out who they are, and particularly trying to find out who they are in a world that likes to separate and divide. And it was something I said at the end of my TED talk, which was that, none of us are half anything, all of us are both something. And that's really the sort of the message of the book, if there's a message as such, is that, yeah, we don't have to think of ourselves as fractions and sort of composites. We can exist whole and multiply.
And the bit about your English, the English side of you, I never realized that the English had this sort of that they were diffident about being proud of being English. I mean, this was a revelation to me.
Oh yeah, the idea of British nationalism and or English sort of patriotism is cute. Yeah, it's yes, there is. It can be quite contentious. The idea of English identity, pride in English identity, has for a very long time now been associated with right wing politics, with a sort of like nationalistic politics. And yeah, that was something that I wanted to grapple with and try and understand better. Because yeah, part of this journey was me figuring out, well, how do I identify? I had an incident in, I think it was 2016, where I was doing a play and I had to write my biography for the play. And it occurred to me that pretty much all biographies begin with, so and so is a British actor, so is a Indian cricketer. Like, it's always the you've got nationality and you've got profession. And so I didn't know how to describe myself because I was like, well, I was wanting to have my sort of Indian Punjabi identity be known, but to describe myself as British Asian felt slightly odd because in a UK context, British Asian has always, I mean, as I say in the book, British Asian has always been a descriptor that best suited, somebody like my dad, who was like, visibly brown Indian. not me. And then so I was like, oh, am I Anglo-Indian? And that had sort of some historical connotations, and I was sort of figuring this out. And in that journey, I sort of, because what I thought that national identity was this sort of immutable truth that everybody has a national identity, and if you don't know what that is or how to identify, there's something wrong with you. And actually digging into the history of nationalism and national identity, discovering, I mean, it seems ridiculous me explaining this to an Indian audience given Indian history, but obviously nationalism, national identity, nations are just inventions, they're narrative creations. And once I started to understand that, my these tensions that I felt around English identity and its the quite consistent narrative in my lifetime of Englishness equating to a sort of far right xenophobic nationalist politics, I was like, oh, that's just a story. And that is a story that I can engage with. It is a story that I can maybe change. And actually, it was really interesting looking at the history of England specifically. Englishness has always been equated with, the Anglo-Saxons. And Anglo-Saxons is a hyphenated word. The Angles and the Saxons were two different peoples. And so at its very outset, the English identity has been one of mixedness. And so in discovering that history, and this is really the story of the book, is like it's like how through discovering origins of ideas, through discovering history, I then sort of discover a new way of thinking. And then for me, it became incredibly easy to reconcile my mixed identity with my Englishness, because actually to be English is to be mixed. And then suddenly it made sense.
Okay. There's no such thing as a fixed identity, right? You also bring that.
Identity is constantly in flux. It is a process. It is something to be engaged with consistently. I think that you're seeing interesting versions of this play out in India at the moment, between what does it mean to be Indian? Is it something sort of static and fixed from history that must be preserved and protected, or is it something dynamic and fluid and that can evolve and shift in time? And I think it is, definitely the latter. It's constantly evolving. I say in the book, Guru Nanak never ate alu gajar.
That is a good paragraph. All those things we never ate. It's true.
These are, it's, it's quite common to, I think it's quite well known now that, like masala jar is like was sort of just sort of imposed on India in a way because of sort of the politics around the international trade in tea with the East India Company. So it's, but are these things, does it make them less authentically Indian? Like, no, absolutely, that's ridiculous to suggest that. Like I say, these are stories, and I think we can all participate in the telling of those stories. I say in the chapter about national identity, like national identity is not a uniform that you either wear or reject. It is a rich fabric that we all weave with our own distinct threads. That for me is what identity is. It's a constant weaving.
And nationalism itself is such a, I mean, in the larger picture, it's such a new concept, right? I mean, it didn't even exist. Maybe a couple of 100 years ago, nobody was going around calling themselves this or the other, specifically before colonialism and before empires, modern empires, maybe,
And I think what a lack of awareness around the sort of the relative newness of nationalism is that we often then lose the importance of class and economics, because actually so much of what used to divide us in the past historically would be along economic class boundaries. It's like, are you poor, are you rich, do you own land, do you not own land, do you have to work in order to sort of sustain your life or not? And I think within, and I say explain this within the British context, there was, Thomas Babington Macaulay, who I know has had a large impact in India. He was sort of charged with writing the history of England, and that was done as a response to working class movements, the Chartist movement, that was clamoring for greater representation in parliament and a more equal society. And, you know, by telling the story of like, this is the narrative of the nation, it sort of, it was basically able to, you know, in other parts of the world, as, you know, eventually happened in India, nationalism was a way of liberating, a population was able to liberate itself from the oppression of a colonial, of like colonial rule. Whereas in Britain, because it was like a colonial metropole, like that sort of dynamic was taking, it was very much, it was like a class
Yes.
uprising. And so, by taking control of the narrative of the nation and being like, well, look, if you are making demands of us, you are, you know, criticizing us, those of us in power, actually you're a traitor, you're treasonous, you're not, you know, you're disloyal. And so, you know, the sort of pride in the nation was sort of used as a way to curtail a class uprising, like a working class uprising. And I found that really curious. Yeah, and I think that's definitely, you know, I have a whole chapter about trade unionism and my sort of activism as a trade unionist and within my own industry. And I think the more I've come to understand that actually, yeah, these various identities that we have are the ways in which we move through the world, but grounding our politics and our activism solely within the realm of identity can be quite dangerous, because then it distracts from the underlying cause and issues, which is economic inequality. We exist within an economic system, within a capitalist system, and that is the system that creates, the race as an idea was sort of created out of a need to justify social hierarchy based on skin color. And that was, you know, if you forget that, it's then you get into the realm of quite, I guess, we see this, I mean, particularly in the UK with like identity politics and the way in which people seem to get more fixated on talking about identity and less about the sort of the underlying economic inequalities that perpetuate those. There's a great phrase that, you know, like race is the modality in which class is lived. And I should check. I've forgotten now each time.
You do point this out even in the early marriages between the East India Company nabobs and their native wives, and how the wives were treated differently depending on their background. If they were princesses or came from royalty, it was a completely different treatment from somebody who was a local who didn't have that sort of background. And you mentioned various examples of it, right?
Yeah. I mean, the most obvious example for me was, so my first encounter with this history was through William Dalrymple's work with white moguls, and the fact that, you know, Khaya Nisa is sort of treated, I mean, as royalty as she was, like, and, you know, so much is documented, and, you know, it's presented as this profound love story, and then you've got one of his early mistresses, just who's just referred to as the dark girl, and just has and there's no record of her, who she was, what happened to her, anything like that. And that's just a very clear and stark example of, yeah, the way in which it was class that was really the fundamental dividing line in society at that time.
Though in one bit where you mentioned Kali Bibi, I was wondering whether she's Kali Bibi or Kali Bibi. Kali is like bud, so that whole thing where Kali is bud, but in English it's Kali.
Right,
It could be Kali as in the goddess Kali, or but that's an unusual name I think for a woman, or it
sure,
could be
yeah.
Kali. Nobody calls anybody Kali so casually, but maybe back then they did, I don't know. But it could also be Bud,
Yeah, I
like a
that's interesting, yeah. And I was careful to make a point when I wrote that, you know, this was entirely my own conjecture. Like, as I say, I'm not a I've not been like rooting through archives, but it was just for me that was like a quite a convenient way of making the connection between like particularly because of the way in which James Kirkpatrick's mistress was referred to as the dark girl. It was just yeah, I found it curious that there was yeah, I suppose, but yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't come across that or thought about that.
I mean, I thought perhaps that could also be one interpretation of that spelling, you know. And I was thinking about, you know, how colorism, you know. I mean, I'm wondering, is it's probably as strong in expatriate, I mean, in the diaspora as, I mean, we know it is among all, you know, South Asian, you know, this is the idea of shadism and colorism is as strong as it is in India. So I'm wondering, within a, you know, a white, larger society, how does this play out? You know, is it still as strong, you know, or in its manifestations, or it's a little
So you
less?
what colorism in the UK?
Yeah, no, within families, you know,
Oh, within
within
families, I see.
and within the community, within the small, the immigrant community, you know.
I guess I mean, yeah, I would definitely hear that, growing up, the idea of like, I would hear like a family and a elder talking about how beautiful this this person was, like, bilkul gori rang disi, like it was like that sort of very, that was present. But I was always conscious of it as well. Like I think because of my own just being, I don't know. Yeah, it was never something that I didn't seem to internalize. And I think maybe in my adult life as well, through a lot of my activism work, and because I'm in the acting industry where appearance is quite a big part of work and representation, all of that sort of stuff, I'm seeing more of a shift towards celebrating sort of differences, dark skin appearance, like that really challenging colorism head on.
Like Bridgerton.
Yeah, I guess, like Bridgerton. And even like I did a show for BBC Three called Some Girls, and it was notable that my co-star, or the lead, the star of the show, Adeleye Adedeo, was a dark-skinned black girl. That not a light-skinned black girl, in the way that blackness had sort of been, I guess, in some ways, the media seems to present a, quote unquote, palatable form of blackness through light-skinned blackness. But I think that it also does indicate, yeah, how far we have to go, because yeah, I still get people who comment on how from other black women who I've had a few people stop me when I've been traveling around London, who say that how refreshing it was for them as young women watching that show to sort of see that kind of representation on screen. So yeah, I think, I mean, yeah, it's it, I'm it's nice to think that there is I think greater awareness, stuff like Bridgerton, yeah, I think. But the fact that we're having this conversation suggests, there's still a way to go.
Of course, of course. You know, as somebody like, you know, who's acting and you've written about it quite a bit and who looks, well, white, you know, to somebody who doesn't know you. So, and you've written about it extensively in the book. And a lot of and maybe the your sister and your father are brown, right? I'm guessing. I don't know about your sister, your father is. So, and that whole episode about you being in the hospital with a ruptured appendix, and people not guessing that you know, you're who the whatever, the name's up there, but that's not you. So this sort of like disconnect, you know, did it happen often? And you know, I mean, I found those bits sort of disturbing, you
I
know.
mean, I guess it's very disturbing to feel that somehow who you are and your name and the way, it's the most basic way of in which we interact with others in the world, for that to suddenly feel like that doesn't work. That's a that's yeah it was that was I mean that's why they really stick in my memory. I think in a way, the so it was a combination of my whiteness and sort of general ignorance. I think obviously to you see my name on the cover of the book, you see Jasa Alawalia, you know exactly what that history and that heritage is. For a lot of non South Asians in the UK, particularly, with white people in the UK, they see my name. And Alawalia might look a bit unexpected, but the Jussa, like, I've had so many people who says, have been like, oh, is it Danish? Is it Finnish? Is it maybe Norwegian? Like, it's somehow Scandinavian. I have so many people who their immediate impulse is to change the J into a Y, and they're like, Yasa? Is that how you pronounce it? So it's like, I guess, and I say this in the book, like, Jussa was like just ambiguous enough when paired with my appearance, to sort of get for me to not have too much friction. And that's why I'm very glad, I'm happy that I was able to, I wasn't sort of encouraged, or nor did I really want to change my name, when I became an actor. So I was able to hold on to that.
You also talk about all the other actors, like notably Ben Kingsley, and all this
Yeah.
whole history of mixed race actors who had to like pass as white,
Yeah.
there's
Yeah,
that whole
that
background.
was such a wonderful discovery, because I thought I was so alone in this experience, and that it was like a modern experience, and that to somehow, I was navigating being a, white presenting mixed person in the age of Netflix, and this was, where does my Bridgerton moment come? And then to discover that, there was, from the outset of Hollywood, this was something that people had been dealing with, the story of, Merle Oberon, Boris Karloff, Vivien Leigh, and then I guess more Ben Kingsley, like,
Though you
suddenly
miss Freddie
realized,
Mercury,
oh
you
yeah,
miss
he's in, I guess, the Freddie Mercury's in my gender and sexuality chapter. yeah yeah Freddie Mercury as well. Yeah, it was wonderful to suddenly realize that I was part of a legacy and a history, and that was quite comforting, even though, these are not pleasant stories. And I say this about a lot of this, discovering the history of mixed people, where their mixedness and mixed people are being centered in those stories, was, even when the stories were traumatic and unpleasant, to discover them was a joy, because it suddenly felt like I felt like I was finding a past in which to root myself, and understand, like, how this, how we got to where we are. And sort of the whole journey of me trying to figure out this question is really me trying to figure out, what is my origin, and that's, which is why the epigraph is that line from the Guru Granth Sahib, Apna Mool Pachan, recognize your origin. And yes, and that's sort of the journey of the book, is in a literal sense trying to find my origins, like, where do I just come from, and then into the final chapter, as I get into, more of the concepts of Sikh philosophy and ik and all of that, and then really realizing that actually both not half really is my own expression of non-duality, my own expression of the idea of ik or om, or like the Sufi idea of tawhid, like the sort of the universality of all. Yeah.
And you mentioned about not being the right kind of mixed. What does that mean?
There is a kind of idea of what a mixed person should look like, and a mixed person is somebody who should look, sort of very much an intermediate. They should look, very obviously that they are somehow ethnically mixed, ethnically ambiguous, that their features, whether it's and particularly also in a UK context, the mixed race had become almost a shorthand for light-skinned black people, of mixed black and white parentage. That's how it was being used in UK casting. So an audition would be like, we are auditioning for, we need somebody who is, 18 to 25, mixed race. And inevitably what they would mean is, a light-skinned black person, who's got a white and a black parent. And so the vast diversity of what mixed looks like was being totally lost, and that was what's, so it's interesting. Yeah, the right kind of mix, because that the idea that I wasn't the right kind of mix was something that I felt that that the industry, like the world of acting, had sort of taught me that. Because really, what the world of acting had taught me was that I should be quite grateful for my whiteness, because it's my whiteness that was going to get me work. Because, in the UK, the opportunities for South Asian actors, for basically any performer of the global majority, like is limited, very limited. And I was getting work as a Russian spy in Peaky Blinders, as a East London telegraph boy in Ripper Street, and as a whaler in the period drama The Whale for the BBC, which are all opportunities that came my way because I was able to play white. And as a but then it's sort of in around 2019 is that's when I started to realize, in playing my Diaji character for Instagram, I was like, yes, that was sort of, heightened comedy, but this, my Punjabiness was like a huge part of who I am. My first love for performance came from Bhangra and dancing at weddings, and I just realized that this was what I wanted to be accessing and exploring in my work. And that's where people like, Ben Kingsley were quite confusing to me, because actually, yes, Ben Kingsley played Gandhi, but like Ben Kingsley has never played, at least to my knowledge, none of his most famous roles have been mixed characters. It's been his ability to be this chameleon shapeshifter that has made him such a brilliant and diverse actor when it comes to the number of roles that he's played. But actually, my thing was that, I want to be able to play with my. I think I say in the book, part of the joy of being an actor is being a chameleon, but I wanted to play with my true colors. And that's and so really the journey with Both Not Half has been to be, because really you can only be the right kind of anything if you accept that somebody can make that judgment, that they can decide for you what is and isn't right. And so the Both Not Half campaign, and that's why I described it as, it's part memoir but part manifesto, is the campaign element of it is to say that no, I get to decide what my identity is, and actually I am mixed, and actually you need to change how you think about what mixed looks like. And that sort of informs a lot of my activism within the UK film and TV industry, and work I've been doing with casting directors, and the way in which casting and auditions work in the UK to create a new system or tools within the current system that allow for true multiplicity to be listed and found when it comes to auditioning. And yeah, but we're at the very start of that, that I'm just starting to have those conversations. The more vocal and public I'm being, there are some casting directors now who are aware, but it's taking time to shift.
So how do you do that? I mean, because I often people who are Indian and British or Indian and English, they either look Indian or they look English. You know what I mean? So how will you start this conversation? How do you bring it up with these guys? Because they just see you as what you look like outside and not what you're on inside, you guys.
I guess it's like asking the question, like, why is this important? Is it important that, maybe
Especially given that acting is such a, it's an, I mean, it's what you look like, it's so much, it's so dependent on looks.
Yeah, but sometimes I think sometimes it's like, is it important what you look like? Because actually, maybe it is within a certain story context. Maybe it is very important, and a whole story beat hinges on the fact that this character is visibly brown, and has a particular sort of skin tone, and that is like very relevant to the story. And in which case, fine, that might be true. But maybe, what is it perhaps that in order to tell this story authentically, they need somebody who can speak Punjabi quite fluently? Do they need somebody who've got intimate knowledge of Sikh customs and practices, Punjabi Sikh customs and practices. What is it that is specific about the role that requires that? And actually, in that sense, in some of those circumstances, I might be a better fit. And actually, why are we telling these stories? And because the stories are how we understand ourselves, and then how we understand ourselves informs the stories. It's like it's this sort of feedback loop. And so if we're not telling representative stories on screen, then we're not able to sort of understand ourselves properly. And I think if I was able to be on a TV show or in a film where, I've looking the way I do, speaking Punjabi with a visibly brown actor playing my dad and a white actress playing my mum, like if that was more commonplace, I think the idea that somebody like me, looking the way I do and is engaged in the culture in the way that I am, I don't think that would be as remarkable or as special or as different. And I think in a way that's what the campaign element of Both Not Half is to be like, there is nothing particularly special about me and my Punjabiness. It's just that we don't understand that this is I guess it's not that rare. I'm actually meeting lots of people as I'm doing the book tour and doing events, and I'm meeting loads of people who have got very similar experiences who are like, yeah, I never really felt like, I got seen this way. Or and I, but I think the world of acting is very interesting, and I think that's probably why it was my journey as an actor that prompted me to do a lot of this stuff, because acting, the industry operates with gatekeepers who decide what people look like. And that, yeah, and I'm so what I'm doing is saying, well, I don't think you should get to decide that anymore. I think I get to decide that.
And when I was reading the book, and I was thinking this sort of like a parallel in Kalki Kekla in Hindi films, she's French, but she's also like she grew up in Tamil Nadu, so she speaks fluent. And I remember interviewing her many years ago, and she said that she feels totally Indian. And she'd gone to London, and she didn't feel like she fit there. And she's made a big success of herself in Bollywood. That's kind of like the other, the Indian side of the same sort of thing. But tell me about your experience in Bollywood, because that sounds a bit,
I have very limited experience in Bollywood, but I did kind of, I've sort as I was trying to figure out these answers, I did I went to Mumbai in 2014 and met with various people, including Mukesh Chhabra, which was like it just I was in awe because of his work. Not I don't think he'd probably cast at that point, but like Gangs of Wasseypur and Delhi Crime, not yeah Delhi Crime and Sacred Games, and it was really interesting because I'd imbibed this idea that I was somehow special because I was white and could speak Punjabi. I sort of had an expectation that I guess I would sort of be, I don't know, greeted with open arms, and it would be because everybody had told me that. Everybody had told me that. And then I arrived, and it was at, literally the film Two States had just come out, which was, a culture clash movie, but everything within India. So like, and I was like, oh, I'm totally irrelevant. Like, there's no burning need for a novelty Punjabi speaking Gora in Bollywood. And so that was a bit of a rude awakening. But it was wonderful because it was, I mean, I met, it was an experience unto itself. I met the wonderful Seher Lateef, who's sadly passed. It was a joyous few days of discovery. A real sort of like wide-eyed, like I'm just gonna go and see what happens, and yeah, and it didn't really ever come to anything. I mean, there's been a bit more interest again now. I've had a few things coming through via my agents now that I'm sort of being now because I sort of hibernated a bit for 3 years as I was writing the book, but now that I'm being more public again about my work, there's a few opportunities that have been coming through. But yeah, I don't know. I think also, I don't want to perpetuate any of these narratives around, that I'm somehow my whiteness makes me special or anything like that. You know,
Mm.
if there's a artistic, creative, compelling reason, I would love to be, you know, involved in Bollywood storytelling. You know, I found it, you know, I guess I see films like RRR, and I'm seeing where Indian filmmakers are grappling with, I know it's not Bollywood technically, but
Yeah.
like, you know, like Indian filmmakers grappling with like colonial history and putting those stories on screen. I'm like, well, I could be a part of those stories, whether I'm playing British or Anglo-Indian or whatever. Like, those are the stories that I want to be engaged with, because those are actually the, that's the history that I'm engaging with. That's the, how I've come to understand myself. I'm not setting out to be like, I should be able to play, I don't know, you know, like Ben Kingsley. Like, I have no desire to play Gandhi. I don't think that's really what I should be doing.
Be a young Gandhi in South Africa, but then you'd have to like really, work. Yeah.
But you know, like, there are so many other characters in from history, or and they don't even, I guess they don't even have to be like, you know, historically accurate figures. You got shows like Peaky Blinders in the UK, which are, you know, based in history but are quite fictionalized, and you know, I see great potential for that kind of storytelling coming out of British Indian history as well. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with the adaptation of The Anarchy, of William Dalrymple's The Anarchy. That's one that I'm angling for a part in that, because I think that's the kind of thing I would like to do, and if that would be the kind of thing that most appeals to me about coming to work as an actor in India, or anything that Mukesh Chhabra is casting, because I'm a big fan of his work.
Okay, so let's segue into that little bit about, the Akshay Khanna movie, which was, where I don't know about, and about trans.
The
Transgender
Akshay Kumar movie,
representation,
yeah.
yes, and that was an interesting chapter. And you spoke about the problematic representation. And this has been,
Yeah.
this has been generally the truth about representation of transgender people, right? Historically, in our films,
Yeah.
across the world, actually, it's
Yeah.
always a transgender who's the dangerous character. And you brought the this whole thing about not being one or the other, and how it's kind of like similar to the transgender thing. You brought that out also, right? So you want to talk about that?
So I so my first experience of feeling like I was somehow other and different and didn't quite fit in was in when I went to a wedding in London, a Punjabi wedding in London in 2015, and there was a young girl who was staring at me when I was on the dance floor, you know, doing my bhangra, feeling like the most at home. And she was staring at me, and I just saw in her face, or I saw what I reflected back from her look, was that she just didn't understand who I was, or how could it be that this white man was somehow so at home and knew what to do and was doing the dance. And also that whole evening, I'd had, like, you know, like uncles coming up to me trying to be like, oh, you speak Punjabi, you know, my kids, they don't speak, you know, look, you know, this Gorda speaks Punjabi, what's your excuse? Like, trying to film videos of me to send to their family WhatsApps. And it was just, I was trying to convince myself that I was having a good time, that I was being a good guest. And but really, what I realized that night was that I just felt deeply uncomfortable. That for me, a Punjabi wedding was always about feeling at home and safe and protected, and it was where I could be most relaxed. But that night, I felt like so out of place, and it was just a very unpleasant experience. And I was telling my sister about this, and she remarked, oh, this is probably your first experience of being othered, isn't it? And it really struck a chord with me, because my sister's darker skinned, identifies as queer. And so her experiences of being othered have been very consistent throughout her life. And suddenly I found this parallel. We had this parallel in our, you know, different, obviously, but a parallel experience that gave me insight into the struggles that she'd had. And so as I was developing the ideas of Both Not Half, I sort of realized that this was a sort of non-binary way of thinking, and the word non-binary had become sort of more in use around gender identities, and particularly around the conversation around trans rights, which seems to be a particularly weird fascination with members of the right-wing media in the UK. And there was this phrase that was being used as part of the campaigning, you know, trans women are women. And I struggled to understand that for a while because I wasn't well educated enough. But the way in which it started to make sense to me and I was able to access it was I was like, well, I feel an inherent sense of kinship with trans people because actually my experience and knowledge of who I am is incongruent with how society perceives me. And that seems to be the experience that is being described by trans people. And so I sort of ran the parallel in my mind. I was like, oh, I guess, yeah, I guess I'm not what people would perhaps call a typical Punjabi, but I am a Punjabi, and I'm not somehow lesser in my experience as a Punjabi. And I guess in the same way, you would say that, you know, trans women are perhaps not the typical experience of a or a typical woman in the way that people might expect, but that doesn't make them any less of a woman. There's no sort of hierarchy of womanhood. And I sort of ran this panel. I was like, oh, I think my struggle is your struggle. And I sort of came to this understanding of the solidarity required and the how, you know, the trans fight, trans liberation struggle was also my struggle. And so it was within the context of learning this and understanding the parallels that that then this offer came through for this part in this Akshay Kumar film. And immediately I was so excited because actually I wasn't being asked to audition. They loved my showreel. They thought I was going to be great for the part. And so it was like, you know, a straight offer. And then I discovered that the character was this was sort of being described as a cross-dressing killer. And this was such a trope. And you know, I discuss it in the book. I did feel initially quite conflicted because it was like the opportunity to suddenly star opposite Akshay Kumar. Like it was like a huge opportunity. But at the same time, I was like, but this is wrong. This is not, I do not want to be perpetuating this trope. And so I said no, and I backed out of it. And then it was really bizarre because they just kept throwing money at me. And I'm like, it was, they thought it was like a negotiating tactic or something. I was like, guys, I'm really sorry. Like, no, I'm not doing it. And, you know, I'm not particularly, you know, well healed. So the idea that it was very, that then became part of the difficulty of the choices that well, it was not only was it just the creative sort of moral choice, but like there was just more and more money was being thrown at me. And I was like, this is, infuriating. But yeah, it was the right choice. I'm glad I made that choice, and I stand by it. But yeah, it was yeah, slightly, yeah, a curious few.
If you
Yeah.
had done it, you wouldn't have been able to live with it, you know,
Exactly,
afterwards.
yeah. And I did try to have the conversation with the directors and the producers. I had a Zoom call, and I think I guess it's a case of education. Like in their mind, they were like, "Well, the character isn't trans." And I'm like, "Well, that's not the point." The idea that the character is dressing up as a woman in order to commit murders, that is the trope. That is where these ideas, how we get these ideas in society that trans people aren't to be trusted, or they're either like the butt of jokes, or they're sort of deceiving and dangerous. And I was like, regardless of whether you think, you know, you're like, well, this isn't a trans character. I'm like, yeah, but you're using the tropes that perpetuate these ideas. And sadly, my hope was that if I raise that it might prompt some reflection and maybe a rewrite. But no, it was like they were like, nope,
That's like really
that's
hoping for a lot.
yeah. I you know, I was just like, I just really wanted to do a Bollywood film. I was like, why is it? It was like this like poisoned chalice. I was like, oh, so frustrating.
Art house Indian, it's like mainstream Bollywood. I mean, it's
Yeah.
very rarely that they reflect about things like this. And I'm, you know,
Yeah.
I think so. Right. See, there's this bit. I feel like a lot of the world is filled with distractions that are stopping you from accessing your inner life. I think this is in one of the last chapters. And that
Last
really
chapter, yeah.
stuck, I underlined this line. So do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I guess part of the journey to Both Not Half was really a journey of my relationship, my sort of deep relationship with myself and my mental health and my spirituality. And I think I also say in that chapter that I hadn't realized that the same evening that I posted that first video of me speaking Punjabi on Instagram, I was also engaging in a conversation with a friend who had recently been to stay with me, about philosophy and stoicism and sort of ways of dealing with just the ups and downs of life. And it was only when I started to put the timelines together that I realized that I'd first encountered the term non-duality in reference to a lecture explaining Japji Sahib from the Guru Granth Sahib in relation to like what is the essence, the meaning of Ik Onkar. Because I'd always been told that Ik Onkar meant that, there is one God, and this God was, some sort of anthropomorphic old man sat in the sky somewhere that, if you do good deeds during your life, you might get to meet and you can hang out in his lovely heaven. And then suddenly there was this different idea that was being presented to me through the writings of Guru Nanak, which is that, the everything and all things are divine. There is an illusion of separation and duality, and actually there is no separation between the self and the other, and the realization of that lack of separation, that oneness, that itself is the divine. I guess in the, you have that in like Qawwali, Wohi Khuda hai, like that is the idea. And certainly that just sort of opened my mind up to new ways of thinking. And I didn't make the connection at the time, but I strongly suspect that the articulation Both Not Half came from a sort of a deeper understanding that had started to, because it was December 2019 that I'd started doing that research and having those thoughts. And then January 2020 that I articulated Both Not Half. And I didn't make the connection at the time, but looking back, it seems quite clear to me that that was how that happened. So that line that you referenced was actually from, I think, in around 2017. So a lot earlier in the journey, when I was trying to understand how to find a sense of peace and contentedness within myself. And I guess I was still thinking in those times in a sort of dualistic mindset of there is an internal life and there is an external world, and somehow you have to protect the internal from that external, and I was being distracted. And actually, I guess by the end of this journey, well, that then prompts me to then I discover meditation, or I rediscover meditation as a sort of practice, because of having those thoughts. And that's what leads me to then realize and leads me to re-engage with learning about Sikh scripture and writing and philosophy, and getting to a point where what am I trying to say? I guess it's the realization that meditation isn't necessarily sitting with your eyes closed. It's not, for me, initially meditation was walking by myself in the sort of the wilderness, in the hills and mountains of the UK and New Zealand. But actually that meditation can to be almost in a constant state of meditation where you're aware of, I guess, of Maya, of the illusion, and that it being an illusion does not make it less real. It's still sort of real, but being aware of its illusory nature, sort of, it helps dissolve that barrier between the self and the other. And that's something that I've been trying to really now live and practice, particularly when I've been talking about this book and engaging with people and doing various events. It's almost like, and maybe that speaks to why when I first picked up the phone, perhaps you were expecting somebody who is a bit more, I don't know, exuberant and over the top. But everything that is driving me now is coming from a quite a at least feels like a much more deep and centered sense of contentment. To use the sort of the Sikh phrasing, I think before I was very concerned with dukh and sukh, and I've now got a better sense of what santokh is, and I think that's where I feel like the work is now coming from. So I think that line you referenced was very much one of like me grappling with dukkha and sukha, and I hadn't quite yet understood what santokh was.
So what's next now? I mean, is like
What's
have you just come out
next?
with? Yeah.
In terms of my creative interests at the moment, this conversation that we've just been having about like the spiritual and the applications of spirituality, and it's, it being less about believing in something and rather more like a system of thinking and approach to life that allows life to be enjoyable and meaningful. I think that's where a lot of my interests have been lying at the moment. So I don't know if that will develop into something else. It seems to be the natural progression. The final chapter is called One, Not Both, and it's basically me reflecting on the journey from thinking of myself as, from being half to being both, and then actually to being one. And so I think if there is a second book, that oneness would be the thing that I would want to explore in more depth. But really, I'm very excited to be getting back to acting. I've just started auditioning again, taking meetings, reading scripts. And I think, and I talk about this in the book, I spent a lot of time trying to find myself and explore and answer some of these questions for myself through acting. And that wasn't fruitful because actually the script, the role was always secondary to my own sort of selfish interests. Whereas now I feel like I've answered those questions for myself. And I'm now, whenever I'm reading a script, whenever I'm acting, it's in service of the role, it's in service of the script. I'm able to put myself totally to one side. But more importantly, I can then access parts of myself that I wasn't able to access before, because I know myself now in a way that I didn't know myself before. So yeah, I'm just very excited to be, firstly, to be, promoting the book, talking to people, having conversations like this, because it's wonderful to see how people are responding to it and hearing other people's stories, as well. This book has been about trying to create and find community and belonging. And actually, every event, every conversation, every reader I interact with is giving me that sense, is building that sense of community and belonging. And that's just, it's beautiful. It's wonderful. But yeah, then it was just, I feel like I'm ready, like I say in the book, I'm ready to be me. And I mean that in every sense. And I think as an actor, I'm ready to show up now as an actor in a way that I don't think I was able to before.
And on that note, we'll end. For the listeners, go out and get Jasa Ahluwalia's Both Not Half, A Radical New Approach to Mixed Heritage Identity. It's really a good book, and it kind of gives, even if you're not mixed race, there's much to take from it. I mean, speaking for myself, I got a lot out of reading the book, and I found it an excellent read. Thank you so much,
Thank you.
Jasa, for talking to me.
Thank you
Bye.
so much, Manjula. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.